hot dang listeners and horny toads and whatnot. I bet you got some real strong opinions about whether or not Star Trek Voyager is good or it's garbage.
Yeah.
What if I told you you had a chance to voice those opinions in just a little bit, in a hot second? How about that, cowpoke? If you want to vote on whether season 4 of Voyager is good or garbage, you gotta join that Patreon.
What?
Our Patreon! It's the grand jury. That's right. Justice is for sale.
Vote for sale.
Join up right away at any level, and you get to render the verdict on season 4. Is it good? Is it garbage? Only your money can tell us. Go to patreon.com/shadeaux. That's Shadu. Do it.
Do it right now.
Right now.
Get. I want you to get.
Get.
Just enjoy the rest of this country music we put in here for y'all. This might be like a 5-minute track. We don't know.
We just don't know how to end tracks early. Never found the fade out button.
How does one fade?
How do fade?
How do fade?
I'm going to Google it right now.
Somebody
hold on.
Google that for us.
Pro Tools, fade, how do.
Oh, it turns out you can't do it.
Okay.
I've been down.
Not included in this release.
Oh, man.
Dang you, Pro Tools. My cruel, cruel mistress.
Foiled the game.
We still love you, though. It's a codependent relationship.
Oh. Tasty.
Get. Now get.
This is space. This is the final frontier. These are the cases before the court. Its mission, legislate strange new crimes, seek out new perpetrators and new defendants, to jurisprudently go where no law has gone before. This is The People versus Star Trek Voyager.
The People versus Star Trek Voyager is recorded in front of no one.
For the defense.
Captain Matthias Zapp Spurlock, on leave from the USS Restorative Justice.
Prosecution.
Hold me closer, tiny dancer, John Q. Continuum Esquire.
Judge.
The Honorable Midnightian, later.
May it please the court, case on the docket is case 425-1, stardate 51929.3, original air date 5/13/98.
Order in the court. As is well known to all here, these proceedings are being broadcast to Kelly. That's right, Kelly Lady, you listening right now. We're broadcasting this only to you. So I expect a civil tone and a consummate air of professionalism. No rancor, no ribaldry, and not even a sniff of the lemongrass. The question before the court is this. Is Star Trek Voyager a misunderstood gem, or just plain, tawdry garbage? Now your opening arguments, keep them brief.
Your Honor, I will indeed be brief. One is the loneliest number that you'll ever do. Just ask Matthias. That poor lonely bastard knows loneliness. I mean, you thought Geordi LaForge had bad luck with the ladies. Dating a hologram, falling in love with a shape-shifting murderer that pretended to be his dog or something. Those things pale in comparison to the tragedy that is Zap's love life. Hell, his goop clone is only a week old and has already been on more dates. Lovely. Fantastic. I love it. Thank you.
Captain Spurlock.
Cue the boss fight music. It's time for Seven to demonstrate her mastery of how to be human in a multi-stage battle against her two greatest enemies, herself and an inconsistent writer's room. Jerry Ryan grabs hold of all the dangling threads from Seven's season 4 characterization and slaps them together into a manageable tapestry, one that tells the story of where Seven has been and where she might be going. It's like a good Riker clip episode, but without the Riker or the clips, which means it's just just a good episode.
Now the evidence will be presented in the format agreed upon by the Fairfax Addendum to the Kittimer Accords. Audio recordings of three white guys interrupting each other. Play the holocron.
Oh, yeah. Hold on.
How will we know when to start being funny if you don't... Okay, there it is.
There.
Funny begins.
Initiate now. Fun!
Activate the fun!
Fire the fun cannon!
Activate!
Entertain! Entertain!
Okay. Zoom in on 7.
Enhance.
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 Enhance again.
Enhance.
Dehance.
No, too much! Dehance! So, dehance, just a little.
We zoom in on her. Her face, she looks a little out of sorts, shall we say. And we hear conversation in the room. It seems like, as becomes clear once again, that it's her in an uncomfortable social situation.
Right.
But whereas normally this is played as a crude joke, it's treated seriously in this episode. And she walks over to Torres and Harry, who are sitting there having their lunch.
Right.
And she's like, I would like to talk with you. And they're like, oh, all right, what is your place of origin? And then they begin this series of jokes of she keeps talking over them before they have a chance to answer, which is funny and weird. I do like it. But we have to stop because we have learned that Harry Kim is from South Carolina.
A piece of information that we cannot simply gloss over.
Because of course he's from South Carolina.
Of course he is. The worst
The state. Lesser Carolina.
Wait, check to see if we have any Patreon subscribers from South Carolina. If the answer is no, then let's proceed.
Probably not.
Good. Good.
They don't even have the decency to steal all other types of barbecue and make them their own, like us in Georgia.
Right.
They have just some sort of weird genre-specific barbecue.
Barely qualifies as barbecue by anybody else's standard.
But and that's weird that he's from South Carolina, right?
It's a little odd.
It wouldn't have... If you'd asked me to guess which state... First of all, that South Carolina still exists in the 24th century.
I thought about
why that. Why hasn't it been obliterated?
Yeah, also, like, why would they still refer to the state they're from? But then I remembered in Star Trek IV, A Voyage Home, which you haven't seen in 20 years, Kirk does say true. He's from Iowa. So there
he
does
only works in space.
He's from Iowa, work in space. There does seem to still be lingering regional pride and affiliation.
There are territorial identities to some. I mean, didn't Janeway in season one mention we assumed she was from the South based off of some of her culinary
predilections. Her pecan pie dealings.
But what did she say? Indiana? She's from an I state, one of them.
I think it's Indiana.
Yeah.
Apparently they still talk about states.
Bloomington, Indiana.
Yeah.
It also makes me curious who in the writer room really had a bug up their ass that he was from South Carolina. Like, it's so specific. Because, you know, in TV, there's generally, like, you're generically from, I'm from Los Angeles, I'm from New York, you know, like.
San Francisco. I was born there.
So it's got to be Charleston, right? I mean, because he ain't from the country.
Totally from Charleston.
Yeah.
That pirate town.
South Carolina, of all places for him to be from.
It really stuck out to me. It was interesting. But anyway, so she goes on, like, explain to me why you became a member of the Maquis. And, like, Tori's like, well, I met him. It was through Chakotay, and he kind of list the sports you play. And he's like, well, I play several sports. He's very proud of that. My favorite is volleyball. Tell me the foods you find enjoyable. Describe the nature of your sexual relationship with Tom Paris. And freeze program. Doctor comes over, and it's clear that, oh, okay, this is one of his simulations to help her learn how to interact better with the crew, to become a part of this social group. And they have a quick conversation about how, like, this is what you said to do. Like, ask them questions that are about them, and that's how you connect with them. He's like, well, you got to wait and, like, listen to what they say. He's like, that's dumb.
You got to warm up to describe the nature of your sexual relationship with Tom Paris.
And he's like, you got to take your time
He's like, okay, do you want to try again? She's like, look, I'm overdue for my weekly medical maintenance. Like, you never volunteered for a checkup before. It's preferable to remaining here. And so, yeah. And then we cut to the bridge where they're coming across a new space thing. And like, well, what have we got here? A Mutara class nebula.
Mutara.
Is that a real thing? Did you Google it?
No. No, I didn't.
It sounds cool.
I'll give them that. That it's vast. It extends beyond the reach of our sensors. It's like, okay, well, we won't try to go around it. And like, so they kind of start creeping in, and we get a nice yes, ma'am from Tom. Haven't heard that in a while. It's like, okay, well, there's a slight radioactive field. We don't quite know. And then Harry starts to feel woozy, like he's got a headache coming on. And then I do love how Tom's like, Captain! And he grabs his neck. And then we see that Harry's got radiation burns appearing. Yeah. Everyone grabs their head and topples forward. And that's the end of the cold open.
Which is a weird cut for the cold open.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not a bad cold open
on
its own merits, but where they chose to cut it off there to go to credits, I feel like, I don't know, give us a, Tom, get us out of here, or something like that. Mm-hmm. Give us a line before you roll into the credits.
Everyone slumps over. And this cold open interests me, and there's really this whole episode, but for some reason this cold open felt, in pacing and the way it was shot, more TNG-y. I don't know why it gave me that impression. Like, I can't point to anything specific, but I was like, this feels like TNG all of a sudden. And I don't know why. Was there a different director? Like, did they bring someone over who worked on TNG?
Did Rick Berman co-write this one?
Kenneth Billard directed this one.
Is he a new guy?
No.
Because I think that Rick Berman co-wrote Hope and Fear, the second episode of this one.
Okay.
I see what you're saying, and it's a very sort of a TNG problem set, too. It's the kind of, there are a lot of TNG episodes where the ship gets caught in something or backs into something or some kind of space phenomenon forces someone to be alone and be isolated. TNG played with that a lot.
Yeah,
actually, pretty much every main cast member got an episode where for some reason they were the only person on the ship.
Maybe it was just the tone shift from playing Seven's uncomfortable feelings about interacting socially. Like, they played them almost 98% as a joke up until this moment, and now it's treated as a real human problem that a human being's gonna have to interact with and solve, instead of maybe that's what I was reacting to. I don't know. Sometimes I just get a feeling and can't explain it. Okay. Back on the bridge. They're all like, Tom, turn us around, get us out of here. And he's like struggling across the floor, but he's dying too fast.
Captain!
Luckily, calls down to sick bay, and the doctor's like, oh, we're being inundated with calls. What's going on? And he's like, Seven, go to the bridge and take the dermal regenerator and help them out. Then we cut back to Tuvok, powers his way over to the helm. Course laid in to back them out of there. They're like, okay, we've cleared the nebula. Everyone feels better. They're like, okay, everybody stop. And then they go over to a dead crew member, Hamburger Face. He's dead. And then I was like, was that Big Spaghetti?
Oh, no.
Was it Big Spaghetti? Surely not.
That's Hamburger Face.
That's Hamburger Face. Well, they don't say his name. They don't say the crew member.
It's Hamburg.
I feel like Ensign Big Spaghetti could survive anything that Harry Kim could survive.
Yeah.
So if Kim was tough enough to make it through that, Big Spaghetti's down there in waste extraction somewhere.
He didn't even notice.
He's like, I'm experiencing a slight itch. Maybe I have to pick a Benadryl.
There's two things.
He's messed up.
This is the first time in a while that they've immediately made the stakes so high.
Sure.
We redshirted somebody. We killed a crew member to show you this is absolutely deadly. And second of all, why didn't they put Seven's blood?
Borg
nanoprobes in him. He's only been dead like a second.
True.
And that was true. It's just a shame. I mean, I don't remember what our final verdict on that episode was. I don't think we hated it. It was a good Neelix episode,
yes,
but it wasn't worth that having that cloud hanging over the show for the rest of like the next three seasons.
We gotta ask it every time.
Every time they kill someone, unless the person is disintegrated, just obliterated, we're always going to have that in the back of our minds. Of, well, just give them a shot of them Borg nanoprobes. Bring them back from the Great Forest.
Well, R.I.P. Hamburger, instant hamburger face.
Maybe the radiation damage was too extensive.
We can tell ourselves that. That's whatever. It's fine. Like many of the sins of season four, we're going to have to just kind of sweep it under the rug to be able to keep going.
Going to have to live with it.
Nope. It's terrible.
So we go down to Astrometrics Lab, where they're showing some fancy 3D displays. I like. Wish we had more of that. They say, okay, it's about 110 light years through the nebula. So it's a month to go through, a year to go around. And Janeway is pissed. Like, we've come 15,000 light years. We've faced all these dangers, and we haven't been stopped. And I'm going to be damned if I'm going to be stopped by a nebula. Because we're going to figure out a way to get across this.
Everybody's going to have to hold their breath for a month. That's how we're going to do this.
Okay, so they're still trying to figure out, like, we've analyzed the gases from the nebula. Subnucleonic radiation is just cooking us from inside. Like, okay, well, is there any protection? Janeway's asking the doctor. He's like, well, yeah, I could do these stasis chambers and put the entire crew in suspended animation. And Janeway's like, that's a drastic step. He's like, I've considered all possibilities. This is the only way. Shut up, audience. We considered all the possibilities.
No more thought.
This is the only way.
If I even catch you thinking about this, I'm going to be so mad. It's the only way. Keep going.
And say, okay. He's like, well, who would pilot the ship? And the doctor's like, well, I have a command of the rudimentary aspects of piloting. True. We know that.
Yeah.
It's like, look, yeah, but it's not that I don't trust you, but you need backup. What if you went online? What if anything happened?
Offline.
What if you went online and just started playing World of Warcraft all the time?
Yeah.
Completely lost track of time.
We would need someone.
By the way, we've all been guilty of that.
True.
And then the doctor says, well, there was only one crew member who was unaffected. Dun, dun, dun. And it's Seven. We, of course, know it's going to be Seven.
Sure.
Right.
A, because clearly this episode is about her, but also in any situation where there's only one special person, it's going to be Seven.
Yeah.
At least this season, that we've gotten used to that.
What if they had really thrown you a hook and just been like, it's Tom for some reason.
Tom Paris.
Yeah.
Immune.
Just, did you have just, trouble
he's
thinking?
He's just like our stock random white guy. You'd think he'd totally be affected by this.
Do you have trouble thinking of anyone other than her and the crew?
Well, there's Seven.
I was reaching for one of our dumb made-up characters, but we've already talked about Big Spaghetti a lot. Nicoletti, that's the one I was trying to...
Susan Nicoletti.
Smurm Jansen. Talking about his quads.
It's the younger Delaney sister, who also doesn't have a first name.
It was Baby Wildman.
Only Naomi can steer us clear. So we cut to Janeway's talking to Seven about, like, this is the you must understand the seriousness of this responsibility. He's like, do you doubt my ability? No, but this is an unusual situation. Like, you're going to be almost totally isolated. And it wasn't easy for you to adjust with a ship with only 150 people after being a drone. Now you're just going to have the doctor.
150 people. That's a new count.
Yeah, I feel like that went up.
It did go up a little bit.
It did go up a little bit.
Yeah. I mean, I suppose it's possible they picked up. Maybe Seven's bringing people back to life. They've had some folks in cold storage who died in season one.
Or maybe it's like a mental health thing. When instead of always saying like, well, there's 132 people, they round up.
Yeah.
When they're just casually talking about, no need to get specific and think about the 8 people that died last week. I don't know. It does seem weird.
It's a bit of a jump.
So you have only the doctor for company. And she's like, I would adapt. It's like, look, most humans don't react well to long periods of isolation.
I'd be okay with a month.
Yeah. All right. So let's go ahead and unpack that a little bit. Like, yes, that's absolutely true. That's why solitary confinement is one of the cruelest.
Just cruel, counterproductive, all that stuff. Like,
yeah. We're social creatures. We start to come disconnected from reality if we don't have other people around.
Yeah.
But it's still only a month.
It's only a month. You can go anywhere on the ship. You have the holodeck.
She'll also have a lot to keep her busy.
And she has
to run the and she has the doctor to talk
And she has the doctor to talk to. And yeah, she has a lot of tasks to keep the ship going.
Well, she... It's weird the way that she words it, because she says, oh, it bothers humans, and it also bothers Borg. I think the way you could have written this line is just to say, because she spent, at this point, still spent the vast majority of her life as a Borg, you might say, this will affect you even more.
Yes.
And she kind of says that, but it's weird the way that the line is phrased.
Yeah, it's worded weird.
And it doesn't bug me too much, especially because with the idea of this background radiation at all times exacerbating her decline, it all still works and makes sense. But like I said, if the setup is just being alone for a whole month would be... I understand that Janeway's freaking out and trying to contain it, and that it's coming out in sort of weird ways, but it's okay.
She's doing like the parent thing where you have to find things to worry about. Mm-hmm. Even though your kid will probably be okay, you have to pretend that it's a bigger crisis than it actually is.
Right. I will say that this episode and the next episode, Hope and Fear, finally kind of cement the mother-daughter dynamic between the two of them.
And resulting in some really nice moments, which... Yeah. It's why, again, I still, just on a personal level, this is the Janeway 7 ship is a thing I don't, they're really pretty clearly
and also they slamming the there's door no that. Romantic tension or chemistry. Trust me, if there was any romantic tension, I would be all over
I'd find it. Yeah.
Well, I think
and ship who you want to ship. Don't take that. I mean, just personally, that one, I get people who are big into the JC, the, you know, Janeway Chakotay thing. I get what they're seeing. I get which breadcrumbs they're picking up there, even though I'm not personally a fan of that ship either. But yeah, the one with Seven, I'm like, that's really a reach. I mean, they go out of their way to make sure you understand this is a mother-daughter relationship.
And also still pretty clear the actresses don't like each other that much.
Yeah.
Things seem to have warmed up slightly in me reading between the lines of all this.
No.
You're shaking your head no. They still fucking hate each other.
Well, if you think about like the next episode, to jump ahead, but like in the next episode, what's the next one?
Hope and Fear.
Like the parts where she's angry at Seven, like she's really angry. She's not acting so much.
Excellent.
It pretty much, from my understanding, it pretty much that tension persisted through the filming of season 4, and it was in season 5 that like they warmed up to each other.
Put on their big boy pants.
Professionally, everything was better from that point on. And now, actually, they're fine. Like, they get along well.
They say they're fine.
Well, I think...
In the 25th anniversary, maybe we can relight
That's only this. Because Kate is secretly
Well, plotting. I think Kate Mulgrew, like, she admitted to all of it, right?
Yeah.
She
has since said that she really regrets that, and that a lot of her frustration at the time was misplaced. Yeah. She had legitimate frustrations related to other elements of the show, and... Jerry Ryan made a convenient target.
Sure.
Yeah.
Which we're all guilty of that, or I've certainly done that.
It's true. I often target like my frustrations at Jerry Ryan.
Yeah.
I thought you were going to say me.
At Derek, yes. Yeah.
But all my frustrations with Jonathan are completely legitimate and appropriately placed.
And constantly refueled.
Constantly refueled.
Okay, so
like a beautiful garden of hate, just new growth in life springing out.
I'm very consistent in the frustrations I create.
Yeah. So Seven says, I can do this, Captain. And she's like, okay, I'll work with my senior staff to work out a list of duties, but the doctor's in command. And then Seven bristles. I'll be reporting to a hologram. And she's like, he's the chief medical officer. He outranks you. He's in charge. And she's like, I... ... understand. Which it feels a little like unmotivated why she would be that bothered by it. Like there hasn't been any like it could be if she was annoyed because of their personal dynamic, which is a little annoying. Like it's very much annoying teacher that I don't want to help me keeps helping me. But her being like a hologram. She hasn't been a hologram racist before, so I don't know.
I think it's probably more that she just doesn't want to have to report to anybody. Mm-hmm. And the fact that he's a hologram gives her a ledge to jump up and grab onto in this argument, you know? Because if he was just another Starfleet officer who outranks her, which I guess technically everybody outranks Seven, because she doesn't really have rank.
She has no rank.
She's like a civilian on the ship.
Mm-hmm.
So that's It's a very, that's the sort of teenagery thing to do.
Right.
Because, oh yeah, mom and dad are leaving for the weekend, but your Uncle Jake's going to come around and check in on you. Well, I don't need anybody to check in on me. I'm a grown up. This is my house.
Yeah. Yeah. So, staff meeting. Like, okay, the stasis units should be ready. We're not going to get into how we had all the energy and resources to make 150 stasis tubes.
Found them. Found them floating in space.
Not going to get into it.
They were there.
They were there all along.
All along.
The standard loadout for an Intrepid class ship. It's a stasis tube.
A stasis tube for every single person. So they're talking about, okay, how long is it going to take? Like at least a month, could be longer. People are talking about, I've never been in long-term stasis. Are there side effects?
This last week's episode was like, we have to turn off the toilets because we're so low on deuterium.
Yeah.
And now.
Flush with power.
If it's yellow, let it mellow.
We should make that sign with Janeway's face for Janeway's our bathroom. If it's yellow, let it mellow.
Wow.
Okay. So, and then I do like in this scene how Janeway's being is forcing herself to be super positive. Like, oh, it's just like taking a nap. You know, don't worry. It's all going to be fine. Like, she's very much got her, I'm the captain and I must control morale by my example.
You're going to wake up refreshed.
You'll feel great.
It's like an afternoon nappy.
And then Harry's like, well, there are things that can go wrong. He's like, I assume that we've explored all the alternatives. Yes, we already talked about this. There are no other alternatives.
Let's not revisit that conversation.
We can just go around.
We've had it before.
Then they start talking about that this, what people are really worried about is the loss of control.
Yeah.
No Starfleet officer likes to give up control and put their fate in someone else's hands. But look, crews have been in stasis longer, which I was like, oh, I'm interested. I'd like to know what that's about.
Yeah.
But I think we can handle this. And she's like, okay, go, you know, brush your teeth before we all go to bed for a month.
I mean, I would prefer, if I had a choice, to be alone by myself on the ship for a month or be in stasis for a month. I'd rather be alone on the ship than be stuck in that little tube.
But you're just napping, man. Take a little nap.
Like, doesn't matter. The 30 seconds that it would take to put me out, like, would be sheer terror.
So you're Tom Paris.
You're Tom Paris.
I'm very much Tom Paris.
You keep getting up and wandering around the ship half-conscious.
Let me out. Radiation be damned.
I love the radiation.
I love it.
Chakotay hangs back, and she's like, something else? He's like, I want you to tell me this isn't a mistake. And she's like, well, no, blah, blah. He's like, no, it's more about who you're leaving in charge.
I hate this.
Okay.
Whole moment.
Well, okay.
Because he's been pretty accepting of her.
I mean, he's gotten better, but...
He has been like, the one yelling at Harry every time
yelling
Harry
at
complains.
Harry every time he complains about it, he's like, go work with Seven. You should have been working with her from the beginning. Like, on every time there's some issue that Harry's had with Seven, it's like, well, you should have been working with her the whole time. What the fuck? Like, it's...
So, it feels like these last two episodes of season four... in lieu of their normal, like, epic two-parter, that kind of thing that they normally do, they're definitely calling forward a lot of things they visited previously in the season. And so I think this is a chance to bring forward the fact that Chakotay, just a reminder that Chakotay was the one who, second only to B'Elanna, has voiced the most misgivings about... It is weird, you're right, because he hasn't done it that much recently.
But
the first half of season four...
Really? I mean... He's the one that had a Borg girlfriend. He's the one that told B'Elanna, hey, just work it out with her. I'm having a tough time remembering parts where he's just been like, Seven, can't trust that girl.
I'm not prepared with specific instances here.
Well, I mean,
but there were, I do recall things early in the season where, this is not utterly, I'll agree with you that it does seem like he's moved past it and now they're bringing him back, which is a general complaint we have about season four. It seems like
people hop
around in their own timeline, Quantum Leap.
Well, I think that's my issue with this episode and the next episode. Is that because they've jumped back and forth with Seven the entire fucking season, depending on what's going on in the episode, like, whatever this episode plot needs, that's where we're putting these characters, and they've done that to Seven a good bit. I'm like, like that's like I'm struggling to remember a time where Chakotay was had this many doubts about her. Like, I feel like he's post been
Scorpion.
Support.
You mean obviously because like, right, Scorpion, yeah. He was like throw her out the airlock.
But that's more him. That's more him doubting. That's his stock doubting Janeway.
If
bullshit.
I wanted to go back and hunt for it, I could find the instances I'm talking about. But I'm absolutely not going to do that.
Well, no.
So we're just
we put enough time into this. Thank you. No, I get it. Like it's a this episode is the Hail Mary on Seven's whole character arc.
Right.
And we can talk about whether it worked or not when we get to the end, but that's clearly what's happening.
Sure.
Like, we got to make this play. Everyone get where you are. Get where we need you to be.
And I actually think that this episode and the next episode is an attempt to try to fix the damage that was done by jumping around too much.
Yeah.
By saying, let's get all the disparate pieces up here and let's try to tie it together. And I think, actually, shockingly, I think they're, in this episode and the next, they're largely successful in terms of taking all those disparate strands and connecting them to a single node. Not that that's not the ideal way to tell a story. So don't, sure. This is a very double-edged kind of compliment.
Right.
I'm sort of damning them with faint praise, right? But right. They shouldn't have made this mess to begin with.
Yeah.
But I do think that this
episode, managed to scoop that turd out of the pool.
Yeah.
Well, they do that. Kids
get back there and swim.
Well, yeah, I guess we can talk about the next episode on the next episode. But
in a week.
In one
not
week.
Not week.
An hour from we finish this one.
Who knows what all we'll do in the next 7 days before
even in
we
that,
talk about
even
that
in
episode.
That, even in the last episode of the season, they walk back. It seems like they walk back some of the stuff that happens in this one. Like,
oh, yeah.
A lot
yeah.
of the frustration with Janeway, I'm like, but didn't, like, Seven just save y'all? Like,
yeah.
Didn't she just risk her own life to get you guys nebula that you could have gone around?
They totally don't jibe even between
it's,
these two
yeah,
episodes.
Well, it's so weird.
It's a fair complaint.
I actually, remind me to bring this up when we talk about Hope and Fear. In one calendar week from this moment, I don't think that Hope and Fear even needed to hook back into the Seven of Nine territory.
No.
I love what Hope and Fear starts out being about, but there does seem to be, I think the fact that they were like, and we got to have a Seven of Nine redemption hook in here, maybe it was a realization that they had not hit all the cylinders they wanted to hit with her. Mm-hmm. Throughout season four, they hadn't done it at least in a coherent and sort of consistent way. But anyway, we'll talk about that when we talk about it.
In one week.
In 1 week.
I think just as sort of a storytelling mechanic, they needed to have somebody come in and express misgivings about Seven in order to set up the whole, ooh, can she handle it or can she not handle it? Maybe it could have been B'Elanna. Although I feel like B'Elanna comes in and complains about Seven, and Janeway would be sort of like, just get out of my face. So I need to be someone who carries a little more gravitas.
Even she in the previous episode was like, take Seven with you.
Yeah. With
Chakotay. So she even... They're setting
up the stakes. And I understand that like this has been a consistent problem throughout season four, is the fact that both Seven's level of development and progress and their opinion of her tends to jump around haphazardly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
As a matter of storytelling convenience.
That's a good word for most of season four. Haphazard.
Haphazard. Yeah.
So Chakotay says, look, you know, it's like it's about who you're leaving in charge that I'm worried about, whether that makes sense or not. Oh, no. That caffeine just hit you, didn't it? Okay. I saw your eyes dilate.
Oh, yeah.
All right.
Anyway, final thoughts.
Final thoughts. Okay. So Chakotay's like, look, step outside just yourself for a minute. I'm like, oh, be careful, Chakotay. You're walking into the, like, be rational woman territory.
Yeah. Stop letting your feelings get
He's like, look, you know, you've butted horns. She disregards authority. She ignores orders. And Janeway was like, this is the person I'm giving responsibility that has you worried. And he's like, you want me to tell you I'm not crazy? And he's like, I know your bond with Seven is unique. And I was like, what bond?
Yeah.
What bond?
The fact they fucking hate each other and she doesn't throw her off the ship
for
some reason.
They fight all the time.
From the beginning, you've seen things in her that no one else has.
Wrong.
It's like, and I understand.
Wrong.
So, like, you guys had to pull this thing. You had to pull it into the bay. You had to get it in there. So, okay. But... totally jumped
I mean,
out.
Technically, he's not. The better choice would have said, You could have said at the beginning you saw things in her that no one else did.
Because for like a week.
Yeah, at the very beginning with Seven, she was the one that was like Seven's cheerleader. Like, I know we can bring her around. Right. She can be a great part of this crew. For shut that. Up, Chakotay. Shut up, Alana. I don't want to hear your doubts about
for
this.
For that one episode, yes.
Yeah. For, well, it was for a span of about 3 episodes. And then...
No, they did multiple times to have her like...
Yes, multiple times.
But then just the utter disgust in Kate Mulgrew's eyes didn't really help that land.
I think this would have worked better had all this been coming from Janeway. Like, it would have been her talking about her own doubts to
Chakotay. Like a captain's, like a personal log
or
kind of deal.
Just talking to Chakotay. Just talk. Sure. Or
walking. Janeway talking to a quantum clone of herself. Is that what you
mean? Yeah.
Her demon clone?
Yeah. Or literally, like, it could have been an internal thing. Her, you know, kind of going through the motions of her own doubts.
That
to put them aside.
That
would be better than this.
But I don't want us to get too wrapped around the axle about that. I guess it's my job to prevent us from getting too wrapped around the axle about this.
I want to be all the way around.
I know you want the axle.
I want this axle inside of me.
what a horrifying image.
Thank you for taking it there.
You're welcome.
This is setting up. You know, we're still like in the first 15 minutes of the episode here. This is setting up the stakes and not. The crew's misgivings about Seven is not really what this episode is about.
Right.
No, not at all.
So, right. You know, I agree that it's handled not great because it's been handled sort of not great throughout the duration of the season, which is probably a discussion that we'll have when we do our big season 4.
I applaud their consistency.
Yeah, well, like I said, like we've talked about it a ton, but... they clearly had a job. They had a mission in mind with this episode, and they weren't super concerned about the inconsistencies from earlier in the season. Because I think it's fair to say, like, what can you do about them now? Like, we already made those mistakes. I wish they had done a better job of acknowledging them in this moment. This was the moment to be like, God, I've been all over the fucking place about Seven. And she's been super weird. And how do we feel? How do we even feel about her? We don't know. Like, just lampshade it. Just, like, make it overt. But they kind of just say, we're going to go with a narrow interpretation of the events you've witnessed prior to get us to where we can tell a story that we want us to tell. That's fine. And I believe she wants to do well by us. And that I can accept as a decent through line for their relationship. As frustrated as she gets with her, she believes that Seven wants to help, like wants to be a part of the group.
Well, yes, everything she's done on the ship up to this point has been to help.
She murdered that one alien.
But she did that because she thought she was helping.
She stole it. Well, yeah, everything that she's done, though, I think the divide is not does she want to help or does she not want to help. It's is she helping as a Borg or is she helping as a Starfleet person? Because right. when she murdered the alien, when she stole the shuttle, all that stuff was more like it really the divide is more about Borg thinking versus Starfleet thinking. Mm-hmm. And Starfleet only wants your help. Starfleet is a conformist organization. As they deal with in Deep Space Nine quite a bit, you know. And it's really, we want you to help, and we also want you to help the way that we want you to help, not the way that you want to help.
Mm-hmm. But Chakotay says, well, that's good enough for me. See you at 1700 hours. Then we go to the tubes.
The tubes.
This is when we meet a new character, whiny baby Tom Paris. I'd rather do it in my quarters. No, you're all going to be on deck 14 so we can monitor you more easily. And then I do like fucking Harry over there. Come on, Tom. Sleepy time. Which you could tell he knows that Tom is deeply claustrophobic and hates this. Yep. And he's like relishing in it. And I'm like,
Do you want us to replicate you a teddy bear?
Yeah, it's good. I like my Harry Kim with a side of sass. Mm-hmm. And if that survives into season 5, I'll be very happy. I like that side of sass on Harry Kim. Okay. What if we got to get out in a hurry? Do I detect a hint of claustrophobia? And they show him, like, there's a little latch that you can let yourself out. It's totally fine, which proves to be a big problem later.
Yeah.
Only 4 times.
I think one of them is a hallucination, right?
All the time she just heard the voice was a hallucination,
right.
I think.
Yeah.
But she does say later.
She actually says, at the end,
she's like, "Yeah." When she finally sits down in the mess hall with them, mm-hmm. she's like, "Yep, got out four times."
And I did really enjoy Janeway being like, "Well, I'm leaving the ship in good hands. See you all in a month." And then you see that last little look before she gets in her tube. And I'm like, she hates this. Mm-hmm. She hates giving up control. She hates everything about this. But there's no other alternative. Mm-mm. And they get in there. And then the doctor's like, just the two of us now. And then I was like, but the episode's called One.
Just the two of us.
I did like the slow pan up to the big ass deck that's been cleared off and is just filled with the stasis tubes. It was cool.
Yeah,
cool little map painting. Personal log, 7 of 9. It's the 10th day of this bullshit. I've created an efficient daily routine. And then she gets nutritional supplement, 14, beta 7. And I love the mechanical way she drinks it. Yeah. Just like drink, drink, drink. But I do have a question. Is nutritional supplement 14 beta 7 just butter?
Just melted butter.
Just butter.
You know it.
Which
she's got to dress it up and make it sound all science-y.
Yeah.
It's melted butter.
And I mainly want to go with that, mainly because one of the few things I do know about later Voyager is that her and Chakotay wind up together and everyone hates it and it comes out of left field. But if we can establish now they both love a warm mug of butter, that's a stone upon which a relationship can build.
That's really the only way to survive in space.
And it could be a whole thing that's just happening. It's a bond that's forming in the background that never...
Everyone makes fun of them and they bond. Like, I mean, I just love a fucking...
Just leave us alone. Let us drink our butter together.
Sometimes I get some crab legs and just let them float around in there.
It makes as much or more...
I grossed myself out. Even though I love some butter on some crab legs. Don't get me wrong.
Well, yes.
It makes as much or more sense than all the other aspects of their... relationship, which I put sarcastic quotation marks around because it's so like show's ending. Everybody's it's like it's so last day of camp. Like yeah. Everybody's got to pair up.
But also because I haven't watched Picard, but I do know she shows up, and I know that clearly Chakotay has been pushed to the curb.
It didn't work. It didn't survive.
Didn't work out.
Camp ended. Everybody went back home.
Didn't work out. Okay. So, and I do love the shot of her sitting in the dark in the mess hall alone, drinking. Her supplement. I also like that she built that into her routine that, no, I go to the mess hall and that's where I take my nutritional supplement.
Sure.
We see her working on a console in engineering. And I do like this middle section where there's a lot of just her doing stuff without a lot of talking.
Yeah.
It makes it feel a little bit like that episode where Janeway fought the giant virus.
Macrocosm,
where it's just her going about the ship, lots of silent actions. We see her on the bridge, and she tells the computer to adjust the heading. Then we find out Tom got out of his pod. You know, I'll be right there. And he's like, you must be more claustrophobic than I thought. And they're like, okay, well, is this likely to happen again? Could be. I don't know.
Yep.
I wish there was a special broom that she grabs to just, like, chase the Tom back into his pod. Yeah. You're going to get the broom, Tom.
And I do like the interplay between her and the doctor in this episode, where he makes a joke, and she's like, a small joke. She's like, very small. Give me his, and then you can tell they're getting on each other's nerves. Mm-hmm. Give me his vital signs, please. She does. Like, I will continue on my rounds. She's like, look, that's it. We're going to the holodeck. She's like, this is frivolous. He's like, no, you're getting more short-tempered each passing day. We need to have a brush-up course on how to get along with people. This isn't a suggestion. It's an order. And I was like, of course only the doctor would think, let's go do this very dumb game.
Mandatory fun.
And then we go to the Holo party where Holo Neelix is passing out canapes.
Yeah.
And like, delicious. And then he's like, join the party, Seven. And I do like how she just starts making the Holo characters help her do her work.
Thing is, I think that's fine. Like, if the whole point of this is for Seven's benefit, mm-hmm. just let it run. But the doctor's an idiot.
Yeah. Well, we never have that self-aware moment. It's like, I'm helping you the way that helped me.
Yeah.
I haven't figured out how to help you.
Yeah. It's like, in that moment, I was like, just fucking leave her alone.
Yeah, basically, in this episode, we get the idea that these sort of scenes have been happening.
Yeah.
All the whole season, we just haven't seen them. And that would have been a great season-long arc of seeing him, like, do this. Okay, this isn't working. Let's try something else. But we don't get it. It's all sort of crammed into one episode.
Yeah.
So anyway, so the captain and Neelix are helping her about the warp coils and all that stuff. And then the doctor comes over like, you're missing the point of this exercise. You look, you didn't specify what I had to talk about. And then she starts getting into holodecks are a pointless endeavor. The human need for the fantastical or whatever. And then they give the doctor a very good line, like between impulse and action, there is a realm of good taste that you need to explore. And then they start talking about, look, you have to report to me 4 times a day. We can minimize those reports. And then they get an alert that the antimatter storage tanks are failing. They run down. They're, okay, cascade effect is in progress. The deuterium tank is rupturing. I'm like, we just got that deuterium, dog. Come on. They're going to have to eject the tanks. Like, he goes to engineering. She goes to engineering. I'll go to the bridge. And I do like this where they've been just, like, at each other's throats for the past 2 scenes.
Sure.
But the moment there's a real problem, they both just snap into action.
Sure.
Work together really well. It's nice. The doctor goes up to the bridge and is calling down. Like, it's worse than we thought. It's flooded with plasma. Plasma conduits are rupturing. She's like, I can do it. I got it. The Satan himself is coming through a breach. And he's going to punch you in the face.
I can handle it.
I can handle it.
I can survive the Satan punch long enough to fix the problem.
And she goes into the door and opens the engineering door and everything's fine. And it's like, it's all right, doctor. False alarm. And that's when I was like, Rut-row. This ain't going to be an easy... of course, as much as I think would be interesting, just like a month of tedium.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And being annoyed with your coworker.
Yeah.
That would be fascinating. But yeah. Of course, we can't have that.
Nope.
This is Star Trek. So they realize there's a bunch of malfunctions in a number of the neural gel packs, a part of the ship they haven't brought up in a while.
But it does make sense that...
Yeah. The radiation.
Why wouldn't they have thought before that the subnucleonic radiation would affect the
yeah.
biomimetic gel packs or the whatever they're called?
Bioneural. Yeah.
Biomimetic gel is also a thing in Star Trek, I think, but it's like a controlled substance or something like that.
That sounds right.
Yeah. Yeah. As soon as they said that, I was like, oh, yeah, somebody should have thought of that.
Yeah.
Somebody should have shielded those things before you all went into stasis.
Should have just switched back to that backup system you should have created.
I mean, who could remember that your ship is basically run on a living sort of alive goo. Living goo?
Yeah.
Yes. Brain goo.
It got a cheese infection that time.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Been there.
Huh. You know?
Okay.
Am I right? So they have to go repair them. They seem to be like cascade failuring. They get a repair kit. And then they're crawling down the Jefferies tube, and they're still talking, like, these tubes certainly weren't designed with creature comforts in mind. And then she says, stop complaining. Like, I'll complain if I want to. It's comforting. And I was like, are we going to get – is he going to teach her to complain? That would be
– that would have been better than what happened. Sure.
And then I did love when they pull up to the panel, and I'm like, two of the packs are blue, but one is gray.
We know
the visual storytelling at
we
work.
Know that's bad.
That's got to be bad.
Mm-hmm.
They're talking about, okay, like there's been random bursts. They're going to take the one that's the screwed up back to sickbay for further study. And they're still just biting each other's heels. And then he starts glitching. Like his program is degrading. He's like, hurry, my program may be irretrievable. I don't want to go to cybernetic oblivion. And they're basically running through the ship. Like, if that happens again, I'm a goner. And I do like the long shots of them just sprinting down the halls to get back to sickbay. Home sweet sickbay. And they pull off the emitter, and uh-oh, the modulator is damaged. He's like, well, there's no way I can risk using it now. I'm stuck here. We've got weeks to go, and now you have to do everything. You have to keep the ship running. We can't afford to break down in this nebula. And then the camera cuts to Seven, and she doesn't gulp, but it's very much a gulp moment of like, oh, damn. And then she says, I won't disappoint you.
She's struggling so hard.
The struggle.
She should have gone, and then, like, tugged at her collar a little bit. Like,
Then we cut to Seven on a snow planet. Looking really afraid, surrounded by snow. And then she wakes up and we find out she's basically been having really terrifying dreams. And I was like, we've kind of hinted around about this before, like on Theravin. Theragun. And now that her dreams are super literal and weird, and like I feel like we've explored Neelix's dreams a couple times. Can't we just get in? Like, I think it would be really interesting to know what a former Borg dreams.
Yeah.
I mean, I guess we kind of see it in this episode as she begins to hallucinate. But the idea of her nightmare is just her alone in a snowy field. It's like, that's really interesting. I'd like to explore that. So we're on the 29th day. So 19 days have passed since the last scene. I'm beginning to feel the effects of prolonged isolation. My dreams have been disturbing. I have increasing duties. Basically, the ship needs constant maintenance to avert disaster. End log. And I was like, this is a good time to shout out. I think Jeri Ryan is really good in this episode.
Yeah.
Like, she's been kind of relegated to, like, here's Seven's cameo appearance for this episode and her do, you know, basic season one Data jokes, as I've been saying. Yeah. But now we get to see her, like, put through her paces, be a really good actress, show the effects this all have on her, the wear and tear of the isolation and the slow degradation of her mind. I think she's really good.
And as this episode goes on, you not only get to see her being vulnerable, you get to see her experiencing the fear of being vulnerable, which is a very textured sort of combo emotion for an actor to try to convey with sort of minimal lines, too. Mm-hmm. I mean, because her lines...
A lot of it's on her face.
Just in her face, yeah.
Well, let me ask you this. Could we have avoided this if she had just assimilated one person?
What do you mean?
What?
Like all of the being alone stuff and having to do it all by herself. Could she have assimilated one of the crew, like Tom or Harry?
Turn them into a Borg.
Turn them into a Borg.
So they could withstand the radiation? Yeah.
But
I guess?
Why not?
Why would they permit that?
But why not?
Because maybe the...
Well, I mean, what is keeping her... It's the nanites, right?
That's,
couldn't she just give them nanites?
Well, she has like Borg. She still has Borg.
Yeah, they seem to be saying like her actual Borg implants
throughout her body
are keeping her resistant to the radiation, not just the nanites.
I mean, she's in effect a cyborg, even though from the outside they had to make her look very pretty and very mostly human.
They had to.
They had to because it was 1997.
They contractually obligated.
There was no other alternative.
Mr. UPN said it had to happen.
Yeah, actually. That's probably John UPN.
John UPN. You son of a bitch.
Yeah.
You son of a bitch.
Of course they didn't have to, but yeah, they had to.
Sure.
She goes on the bridge. She's changing the heading a little bit, making a little course correction. The computer doesn't respond. And as a Star Trek fan, you're like, oh no.
Oh,
yeah. And then when it talks, it has weird, glitchy. And then she goes to manual override and she tells the computer to do a level 4 diagnostic on itself. And then she goes back to the turbo lift. She's like, take me to astrometrics. And she's getting the computer to like analyze 33% of the gel packs relays have been destroyed. Okay, reroute through blah, blah, blah so you can work again. And then the computer voice pops back in for a little while.
Yeah.
It's like, okay. She goes down to astrometrics, like display Voyager's current position in the nebula, how long to complete passage, and 6 days, 5 hours. And then she says, 6 days. And I do think they make a good job of, like, especially with later when the hallucinations start telling her, that's an eternity. I'm like, yeah, time is malleable in the human perception. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So
it's the last mile of a marathon phenomenon. Right. Mm-hmm. That you, it's when you get right down there to the end, things seem to take a lot longer and take a lot more effort.
Yeah. Then go to a POV shot down the tunnel, and then we see, Tom is out again. But no, she's hallucinating.
Hallucination.
And then we go immediately to the proximity alert of a vessel approaching. She opens a channel, and we hear the voice of Trajus Loteric. Which I want to believe is some weird anagram.
Right.
Because by the end of the episode, we learn that this is a hallucination. This character is not real. It's her subconscious creating this threat.
Represents her fear of vulnerability.
Yeah.
Which that actually is maybe the one part of her character that has been
consistent.
Pretty consistent
right.
throughout season 4. Is the fact that she... The only thing that's keeping her from plunging headlong into her pursuit of humanity is the fear of becoming emotionally and physically squishy human.
He's called over and he's like, I have some stuff. I'm looking, would you consider a trade? She's like, well, do you have any liquid helium? He's like, yes, I do. Conveniently enough. And this guy's voice is so slimy.
Yeah.
I'll beam you directly to our cargo bay. And then we see him, good design on the alien du jour. 7 of 9, that is an unusual name. She's like, it's a Borg name. And he's like, Borg?
Never heard of them.
Never heard of them. Are you alone on this ship? And then I had to be like, God damn it.
Pull up. Pull up.
And it's still super rapey.
It's very skeezy.
Yeah.
His threat is physical, but it's also clearly sexualized over and over. And it's one of those, like, if you want to throw retrospect in the bin of history and forget it ever existed, and that it ever was a part of the show, the problem is this is an echo of that.
Yeah, they keep doing that.
They immediately, anytime they want to make her afraid, sexual violence is in the top three that they think of. And that's super troubling. I will say right out, I don't think it destroys this episode, but it's definitely something from the whole portrayal of Seven in this season that's deeply troubling.
They're sort of guilty of that with Troy too.
This
is like a problem that extends across other Trek properties as well.
Yeah,
because I mean there obviously is like the one very regrettable mind rape episode with Troy, but there are other ones
they did
where
that shit in fucking Nemesis too.
Oh yeah. That's right.
Yeah,
I did.
The same fuck. It's like,
yeah, where a man. Oh, this is the sexy character. So a man menaces over them in sort of a leering sexual way.
Yeah,
yeah, and it's like I said, it's pretty easy to spot now. Like okay, unexamined biases about this character is sexual, so we must.
Yeah, I mean, I guess they're tapping the line pretty hard.
If this had been the only, if retrospect didn't exist, this is the only time this came up, I would have been like, oh, okay, this is gross.
Probably wouldn't have blipped on your radar.
No, yeah.
It wouldn't be like, okay. Yeah,
this because she just spells it. There is the one scene where it's the one line where you're right. They tap up to the line.
They do.
And then he has the line where he says, well, what if I don't want to leave? Mm-hmm. Then it's sort of like, oh, don't do it. You know, that's where they sort of edge over a little bit. But she pretty quickly pulls a phaser out.
She's
and it's like, then I will
fucking shoot you.
Kill you if you don't leave.
Yeah. Like,
and then that's kind of the end of it from there. I mean, he continues to be a threat, but it's not so much a sexual threat from that point on.
But yeah. So anyway, so they're talking. He's like, well, I am both pilot and crew on my ship. I'm resistant to the effects of the nebula. I've had to rebuild my engines twice already. I'm super badass.
I'm trying to cross this nebula. I'm the Charles Lindbergh.
Yeah, exactly. and it's interesting that, like, because theoretically this comes out of her subconscious. She created this character. Mm-hmm. And so the fact that he's an explorer is also kind of weird, like weirdly tying into her hatred of how Voyager will not stop fucking exploring. Mm-hmm. Just be efficient, go to where we're supposed to go.
Yep.
So that's interesting. Like I said, I think this episode is really, really interesting. I think it definitely stops short of greatness on many levels.
Yeah.
Because you can see, like, this feels like if you took the script and just worked on it some more.
Yeah.
It could have been, like, really nuanced. But anyway, so, like, then we get to the point where he's like, well, how are you handling the loneliness? You know what I mean. And I've heard that drones can't stand being like, wait a minute, you just told me you'd never heard of the Borg. It's like, well, maybe we should keep each other company. Have something to eat. And then she's like, well, then we have the moment where, like, well, what if I don't want to leave? You will not be accommodated.
Shoves a phaser in his face.
Yeah, pretty much. And then, like, they're walking down the hall, and she's like, he's still pushing her to spend some time with me. And then we hear Seven, help me, and she turns around real fast, and then he's gone, and I'm like, oh, okay, the alien was a hallucination.
Mm-hmm.
And they play it all out for a couple little bit more scenes before she puts that together, but it's pretty obvious right away. Once he just vanishes, they're like, oh, okay.
Yeah.
It's like, he must have a cloaking device. I'm glad that the doctor believes her this week when she comes and reports her.
She did see him run around a corner.
Well, when she, point. So that it's pretty clear to the audience, right there as soon as, like, yeah, like, yeah, if she hears the Tom thing, it's not necessarily clear to her. It's clear he's on the bridge, and so she's like, cool, I'll just kill all the O2 to the bridge and you can suffocate, you big jerk. And then she sees him again after that, after he should
basically be dead, or unconscious.
All right, so Doctor says we must have a cloaking device. I've been working on my mobile emitter. You'll have to try and track him down until I do. Deuterium tanks are fluctuating, and the computer needs a stimulant, but we have to assume he's up to no good. And then he's like, are you frightened? And she says, I am Borg. It's like, okay. She's like, pure will, gonna white knuckle these last 6 days, basically. Mm-hmm. We see a long shadow coming in the hall. She has a phaser rifle. She hears a thump. And then she's like, who's there? And then we hear, like, the alien and then Neelix, and then many members of the crew whispering, like, I'm dying. Help me, I'm dying. Mm-hmm. Then she goes, then we're back on deck 14 with the tubes. And then she beep boops on the console for a second. And then she's back out in the hall, and then we get the whole section where he says, like, 7 of 9. That's an unusual name. Talk to me. Talk to me. Sensors can't detect me. You can never find me. And then, would it be bad if the structural integrity around the warp core collapsed? She's like, no, and she runs over there. And then, I couldn't bring myself to destroy your ship. And then she's like, okay, he's on the bridge. And then she sees Tom and Harry, hallucinations, choking upstairs. And then they're just consumed with fire.
Just burned to death. Burned. I was like, and then there were no more. They were just not on the ship. That'd be hilarious.
Yeah, and this is where she seals the bridge so that it takes all the oxygen out to kill him. And then she's like, I'm here. She calls the doctor, I'm here. I've incapacitated the alien. He's like, I've got my mobile emitter back online. And then we get a couple shots of just Picardo striding down the hall very purposefully. And then I was like, oh, wait, is he going to be a hallucination too?
Yeah.
Turns out no, but that's what I thought.
Or was he?
He has some interesting news. Or was he?
Well, when he, when the, what is it, the
EPS conduits.
EPS conduits go out, he disappears, but his mobile emitter doesn't fall on the floor.
They forget that all the time.
Yeah. If that was the first time they made that mistake, then I'd say, ooh, you're really onto something there. But
I am really onto something.
Maybe they did it on purpose this time.
And I think they just do it to mess with you. They're like, I mean, they have continuity people.
Do they?
I don't know.
There was no other way.
You'd think they would, but evidence to the contrary.
It's that same con man that
right. told that Armenian con man put on a mustache.
Guy.
That came back in to be their continuity editor. All right, so anyway, so the door opens. Surprise, it's the rapey alien. You can't defeat me. You're too weak. You're vulnerable, afraid. We're going to explicitly talk about the themes of the episode now. You know what you are. You're Borg, but you're also human. It's impossible to become human. The warp core turns green, which I was surprised at how shocked. I was like, that's wrong.
Yeah.
That's the wrongest anything could be.
Wrong. It can't be that color.
Then, like I said, it starts to get interestingly poetic. Like, your days of power are gone. And she's like, I'll kill you. Be careful, Doctor. He's dangerous. And then he's like, who are you talking to? And like, you're hallucinating. I imagined him. Did you imagine them as well? And he says, okay, look, your synaptic relays are degrading. You're hearing voices, seeing images. Like, she's like, but it seems so real. It's like hallucinations usually do seem really real. And then she talks about, once when I was a drone, I was separated from the collective for 2 hours. I experienced panic and apprehension. I am feeling that way now. And I'm like, whoa, yeah.
Yeah. That's interesting.
Yeah, and I do like that she knew that when she agreed to do this. Like, she had that huge sense of impending fear even then, and it kind of contextualizes everything we've seen her do to this point. It's pretty cool. I'll do everything I can to help you. An antipsychotic might help. But then, of course, zap, the primary EPS conduits are failing. His program's going all the full line. And she's like, Seven, you've got to hang on. She's like, I cannot function alone. You have to. The only way we can survive is if you keep it together, basically. Then he vanishes, and then she Vader. No.
No.
No. Cut to Astrometrics Lab.
Astrometrics.
Current position.
Actually, the more I like, even if they didn't mean it that way, I like thinking of him as a hallucination here, because then he represents her confidence.
Sure.
He represents the other sure. part yeah. that is at the same time that she's battling yeah. The insecurity, you know, the he represents the part of her humanity that says, no, you can do this. You can handle yeah. this. So let's go with that. Let's say he's a hallucination.
I'm fine with that.
Did they do something smart or did they do something dumb?
The line is so thin.
The world will never know.
So in the astrometrics lab, she's like, current position. And then we get burnt face Harry. It doesn't matter. You won't make it. Like I said, like my Harry Kim, with a burnt face and a side of sass.
He's better sassy because from an acting perspective, that's easier. It's easier to do that than to be subtle, I think.
Well, that is definitely true. I don't think it's an acting issue with Harry. It's just like Harry's character as written is super fucking boring.
Well, yeah. I mean, if you consider like when he started the show, he had only been acting like a year or something. He was still pretty green compared to everybody else.
A deep, almost fluorescent green, as Tom Paris says.
Yes.
Yeah, I mean, my issue with Harry has never been Garrett Wong.
No,
it's an actor. I actually always think he's done an admirable job with not much to work with. But I would be curious, again, if we ever get our Voyager behind-the-scenes documentary. What was, when they were they're going through, what character archetypes are we going to have in the show? You know, you got the hotshot pilot with a troubled past, and then you've got the Vulcan, which is just the Vulcan, you know?
Right.
And then when they got to Harry, they're like, and here's just a guy, he's just going to be like a bland dope, because every ship needs a bland dope. Well, no, it doesn't. They haven't had that in other Star Treks. What was the intent for Harry? Was he supposed to be the reference?
I feel like back in season one, my theory was like they wanted a Wesley Crusher.
Okay.
They wanted, obviously, the kid.
Yeah.
But then they cast Garrett Wong, who doesn't read that young.
No, he reads more mature.
And so that's what a lot of stuff in the first season was like, why would he say that? He's like a Starfleet graduate. He's not a child.
He's like a 25-year-old man. What's going on? Now I've seen some pretty dumb 25-year-olds.
That's fair. I was a pretty dumb 25-year-old.
That's where we all.
So 17 hours, 11 minutes.
Not me.
That's an eternity. Go away. You can try to shut me out, but it won't work. And then he goes out in the hall, and it turns green, and then a Borg starts yelling at her. You have lost the many. You are only one. Weak, pathetic. She's like, I will adapt. I will become stronger. She's like, you will die as one. One Borg cannot survive. You will die alone. And as this is clearly her subconscious just dumping all her fears out.
Yeah.
It's like, okay, fair enough. And then the rapey alien shows up. He's right. Look, you're in pain and I can help you. You need to make a choice. She's like, I can survive alone. And then the door opens onto a Borg cube. And he's like, end your pain. Just walk through that door. Then they hear the Borg voice say, 7 of 9, resistance is futile. And then she hunkers down and she's like, bridge. Then she's still getting more crap from. Now everyone's on the bridge, burnt face hallucinations.
Yeah.
You look a little worse for wear.
Potent stuff.
You suck. Oh, my God.
I never wanted her here in the first place. She'll fall apart before we leave the nebula. And then Janeway's like, blame me. I put my trust in her.
Isn't that a great delivery?
Yeah. Just like leaning over on.
Oh, man. Oh, God.
And then they start like critiquing, like, what is she doing now? How long do we have? Ugh. 41 minutes. That's an eternity. So the propulsion system failure is in progress. All the engines are offline. And they're like, oh, she's taking power from all available systems. Oh, I guess everyone on board will die. You know what she's thinking. If she could take power from the stasis units, that would mean sacrificing some of the crew. But it's about efficiency. Sacrificing a few to save the many. And then she's like, take the power from tubes 1 through 10, specifically the ones that Tom, Harry, and Janeway are in. Like, the command crew clearly are in 1 through 10.
Yep. Kill all the named characters. Ensign Big Spaghetti takes command.
Resume course. Those people she disconnected will die. And then I think Janeway is like, I win. I knew she didn't care about them. And she goes down to the tubes and like, oh, have you come to watch them die? Oh, how long to get there? 11 minutes, which of course is too long for them to be unshielded. They won't last long. It's all up to you. And then she's like, okay, fine. Computer cut life support to all decks, and that will keep them alive. What about you? No oxygen, no heat. And I do like this. It's clear that she is doing this against her better judgment. Like, she's taking, this is her, like, this is her leap of faith. Mm. Like, I'm doing what the humans would do, not what the Borg would do.
This is what I know Janeway would do, and it makes no sense.
Yeah.
But
couldn't, I mean, surely there's one more stasis pod, right?
You would think that there'd be.
Oh,
she could have hopped in a stasis pod.
She could have turned the life support off on the entire ship, hopped in a pod, and then been fine for 11 minutes.
They didn't give her a pod because they didn't leave her a way out.
There are no alternatives.
She had to know the only way through it was through it.
Right, but you would think that perhaps there would maybe be one more just in case there was a problem or an emergency.
They didn't have enough energy for that.
only for the first 150.
Only for 149. Ridiculous. Only for 149 pods.
And then she gives some last lines like, I am 7 of 9. I am alone, but I will adapt. And as sort of a thesis statement of this character, great. Thumbs up.
Sure.
And she wakes up. And someone decides to use the terrible nostril cam from a couple of episodes ago. And I was like,
they love it. They love it.
Come on, guys. And she's waking up and they're like, whoa, not so fast. She's like, the crew, they're in fine shape, thanks to you. I was like, are they going to like pull this out from under her? Like, is this a hallucination where everyone's like, we love you and you're great? But no.
And you were there.
Everything's fine. Remember when we had to put you in stasis because of that whole nebula? Weird. I mean, yeah.
And they're like, okay, you had quite an adventure. And she was like, it was interesting. Well, I'd like to hear about it. And then they're like, I'm proud of you, Seven. You performed admirably. And she's like, I'm glad I was able to help. And then we go to the final scene in the mess hall. They're talking about the soup. This soup is great. My secret recipe and blah, blah, blah. And she walks over. And I was like, wait, is this another weird lesson on the holodeck? But no.
No.
Turns out this is real. And she's like, they're like, hey, I'm surprised to see you. And she's like, well, may I join you? And they're like, sure, have a seat. And they're like, well, do you want some soup? Like, I don't require nourishment at this time. I felt the need for companionship, which is like, this is a huge step for her. They're like, well, I could bet after being, you know, alone on the ship for a month, what was that like? Then she's like, the doctor was very helpful. I cannot fault him. This is the moment she could have complained about the doctor, but they didn't do that. That's okay, though. Missed opportunity.
She complains about Tom.
She does. Like, we could have died in those coffins. Well, Tom refused to remain confined. I had to put him back in his stasis unit over and over. And then they're like making fun of him. Like, what, were you locked in dark closets or something as a child?
Why are y'all laughing at his trauma?
I know, for real. Like, that's a real, like,
Tom really gets shit on in this episode.
Being claustrophobic is a real thing.
It is a real thing.
It's a real fucking thing.
And often it does result from childhood trauma.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm fine with Tom being shit on if it means the safeties are off for Harry Kim. He's coming for your throat.
Harry calls him a coward in this scene. Yeah, he's like, Tom's like, I just like to know what I'm eating, coward.
Yeah, I forgot about that. Coward.
Coward, you stupid piece of shit.
You fuck nugget. Shut up. But then with showing empathy and understanding, Seven says, well, perhaps you just dislike being alone.
Oh, that's sobering thoughts.
Yeah. Okay. So,
but we'll all die alone. You realize that, right, Tom?
The Reaper comes from us all. Final thoughts.
Generally, I like Jerry Ryan in this. I thought she did a good job. I wish, leading up to this episode, like, her character had been dealt with more consistently. Mm-mm. I think it does create problems in the episode itself because of it. If we're isolating it, which is what I guess we're supposed to do, I don't know.
Who knows anymore?
Who knows anymore?
We've drifted from our brief.
It's a balance to strike. I mean, context matters, but then you don't want to punish a good episode for the sins of previous bad episodes.
No, I would say, despite itself, she makes it good. And I think all of her moments are good, and they do make up the majority of the episode. It was good. It was good.
I think, considering the mess that they've made of her trajectory. Yeah. Can you call it trajectory when it's like up and down and backwards and forwards? I don't know if that's even the right word anymore. Trajectory sort of implies like a consistent flight path.
Like a direction, yeah.
Yeah. I actually think this is, with two episodes left in the season, was the smartest way that they could have tried to salvage this.
Sure.
Let's do something, I think I said in my opening argument, it's like a clip show without the clips. Let's give her a story that calls forward all the challenges and growth moments that she's had, often out of order, you know, throughout the entire season, and then lets her sort of like put that skill set into play to let give her a crucible, a 43-minute crucible that she has to survive to show what she has learned through this season. I think that was a good way to handle it. I think that this episode is probably like three turns of the wrench away from being a top three episode for season four. There are things that you said earlier that it just misses. It's a few tweaks away from greatness, and I think you're right. I think with a handful of tweaks, this could be really a great Star Trek episode. Not sure that it is because of those few things, but it still, you know, missing that mark is still very, very firmly in the good category as far as I'm concerned.
Right. I enjoyed this episode a good bit. One of my personal fears is isolation and being removed from all support structures and ways that I've learned to manage different, you know, mental health things is innately terrifying. And watch that be externalized as like, I was immediately like, oh, okay, this is like the ship is her mind and it's slowly degrading and she's running around trying to keep it fixing, just got to make it to this fucking nebula. And I was like, I'm identifying too hard with this. So that was really fascinating. I do agree that it was not great. It was pretty to very good.
Yeah.
Mainly because of Jerry Ryan's performance in it. But I'm right there with you, Jonathan. Like, it's another sort of piece of evidence to how haphazard season four has been.
Yeah.
Where you had this gear, this actress that we could have been exploring this the whole time, and you chose or failed to do so until the 11th hour of the season. And also at the same time, I understand you want to correct everything and get her back on an actual trajectory that works for the character and works for the show. But you had to kind of like blink at a lot of things that don't really jibe with it earlier in the season. So I like this episode. I think it's good. I do think I'm basically coming to your team this season.
Well done.
Like I'm basically ready to crap on season four. Like I'm pretty disappointed with a lot of it. And especially when you look at it, now that I've seen the whole season. In a week when I watch
Hope and Fear. Yes. And then we one talk about calendar it. Week one from today, you'll be able week. To make that assessment.
But as an individual episode, like I wish we could have had this character the whole season. Like I wish this, like if you could move this episode to episode 5 of this season and then go forward, that's the timeline I would want to be in. Like, let's explore, like, or maybe halfway through would be a good point to put this episode where she completes that arc, becomes willing to embrace the crew and the community.
A fully fledged member of the crew.
Yeah, exactly. Because at this point, I'm like, yes, she's 100%. She saved the whole fucking crew at great personal danger to herself. And she didn't ignore Janeway's orders to do it this time. So like, yeah, thumbs up. But it does make it weird in the future when I see Hope and Fear that they kind of like forget it by the next week.
Yeah.
But we'll get to that when we get to that. But yeah, I enjoyed this episode a great deal. RIP, Instant Hamburger Face.
We hardly knew ye.
The good citizens of the jury have reviewed the evidence. Gentlemen, your closing arguments.
Thank you, Your Honor. One is indeed, without a doubt, garbage. Much like Zap's love life, much like Seven of Nine, he too had a run-in with a fear-induced hallucination. And then he tried to date him. That poor, lonely bastard. Thank you.
Captain Spurlock.
Your Honor, officers of the court, hallucinatory ideations of the jury, I know what I'd do if you were all in stasis and I was the only person awake in this room and everyone else was locked away asleep. First, I draw boobs on John Q. Continuum's forehead. Then I draw boobs on all your foreheads. Then I'd take that boob marker, find a legal pad, and do my best to write an episode as good as one.
Ultimately, the fate of this voyage is up to you good beings on the jury, but it is my august responsibility to make judgment based on the evidence and argument placed before the court today. After reviewing it all, I hereby decree that case 425-1 is good. These verdicts cannot be appealed. They are final and irrevocable within this quadrant, space-time continuum, and county. Court adjourned.
The People vs. Star Trek Voyager is recorded in front of no one. Space Judgment 90 and Later is played by Derek Adams. The prosecution, Hold Me Closer, Tiny Dancer, John Q. Continuum Esquire, is played by Jonathan Sparks. The defense, Matthias Zapp Spurlock, is played by Josh Darnell. Oh, God. Sorry, I started laughing because I almost... I wouldn't change it, so I almost called myself a gooey clone again. Through space. All episodes of Star Trek Voyager are presumed good until proven garbage.
Shadow Public Radio presentation. For more excruciating action, please subscribe on iTunes or wherever you seek podcast content.